So if anyone's cold, you're welcome to have Zohar's shawl. Would anyone? Or if it feels like it might give you good vibes or anything like that. Anyone like it? No? Okay. Okay. If you get cold between sessions, feel free to take it. So I'd like to share a little bit about this practice I was introducing last night. And there's kind of a reason why we introduce ideas like this in the evening, and then in the morning we say a little bit more, and then we'll practice it. So it's kind of like these three parts. And this part I'm going to say now is in an understanding that how you heard the talk last night might have led to some confusion, right? How the talk was presented, how it landed, all of that, you know. It's like language is a very imperfect way of transferring data. You know, it's quite lossy. You can lose bits. Also, a reminder that you can hear this talk in Hebrew if you would like to. Have we arranged that, actually? Yeah. So, would anyone like it translated? So feel like it could be helpful? If you feel that in any way that it was confusing or maybe misinterpreted, some of that could be relieved by hearing it in your native language. Yeah? Feel like it could be? That would be great. Are you happy to do that? Same place? No, like, yeah, right. Yeah. Thanks so much. Okay, so anyone who'd like to have it in Hebrew is very welcome. So, I'm not intending to kind of give you more information, but actually kind of go over the steps in ways that I hope will actually make it a little bit more clear what we're doing. You know, I received a few notes, and also some expressions on your faces were also sharing kind of information that it's potential. I may have picked this up not in the way I was hoping that you would, right? So a few brief clarifications, and then we'll kind of go into the material. Because it is quite detailed. It's not complex, it's just quite detailed to be able to hold this. It's quite a refined idea. Okay. First point that we could forget about, right, but really hold it at the center, you do not need to do this. It's an invitation. If you want to pick this up, it's there. There are other practices, they're all great, and there's a lot more that we could do with them. So just check, is it the right time? Do I feel enthusiastic about doing this? Is it something I'm interested in? Yeah. Unfortunately, by me talking about it, it's a bit like I'm trying to sell it to you, but I'm not. I'm just saying, if you want to do it, this is the way to do it, and there's good reasons to do it. But you feel for yourself, okay? The second area of clarification is, what do we mean by dukkha? Step through that in the talk. Just really want to clarify, for this particular practice, it isn't very helpful probably to use the word suffering as a translation of dukkha. Yeah, to say that everything is suffering is not the same as saying it is free from being satisfactory or dissatisfactory. Yeah, it's quite a different thing, and so we're exploring that quality. Okay, again, I'll say more about this. The third area I can see for an area of misunderstanding is actually, what do we mean by a way of looking at things as dukkha? What do we mean by that? Oftentimes, when somebody says something with conviction, right, it's because it's true about that thing. And we're not saying that, okay? We're not saying it's true that it is dukkha. We're saying, what if I look at it this way? What unfolds? Okay? So I think those are three key areas that we could misinterpret. We could feel that we have to do it, and that can add pressure and all that. We can feel that we have an understanding of what dukkha means. We can remember that. You know, you keep using this word dukkha. You know, I do not think it means what you think it means. Yeah? Okay, I'm not sure quite what it means. It's going to be more unsatisfactory than that. And then this is an invitation to look this way. Okay? Not because it's true, because it might be helpful to look that way. It might open out experience. Maybe another area, it didn't particularly come up, but it's really just worth saying. There is suffering in life. You know, we live in a world in which suffering happens. You know, terrible events happen in the world. You know, there's inequality, there's natural disasters, there's wars, there's all of these kinds of things, right? There is suffering in life. We're not denying that. We're not even saying that doesn't matter. And kind of all of those areas that kind of touch us, and we feel that, and we feel the sadness of that, that there's inconsiderateness, there's unkindness, there's disrespectful behaviours. This isn't a practice that's particularly looking at that element of existence, yeah? It's not looking out into the world and saying, all you need to do is go out there and look at it and say, this is unsatisfactory, right? Completely would be an inappropriate practice there. But interestingly, intrapersonally, directed in towards this psyche, these emotions, this perception, this feeling, all of these kind of things. What happens if we bring it in here, into this direct experience, into this bit of the retreat and our psyche and our sensations and our thoughts and emotions and all that? What if we bring it in here? Okay, it's a meditation instruction. It's not a way to live your life. Okay, so I really want to be clear about that. And we will actually say more towards the end of the retreat. So you can kind of like just park that side of an interest in, I want to radically change the world. Is meditation good for that or not? I think it is. I honestly think it is. And we'll speak a little bit about that. But for now, we can just say, this is a practice. We're doing meditation here. We're on a meditation retreat. We're somewhat separate from the world, and we want to explore what's going on. Okay, we all right so far? Is there any? Right, I'm kind of just talking about misunderstandings now to talk a little bit about the understandings. Okay, just shifting a little bit there. All right. So, we did a practice. We've done many practices. We looked at Vedana. We've looked with Anicca. And these are what we might call insight practices, ways of looking at our experience that can kind of open, support, sense of freedom and well-being. Let's go kind of slowly here. So there's a word I want to use, conception, a concept, a type of thought that we don't feel that we intentionally make, right? That this thing is this way. Yeah, so a conception about things can be that things are permanent, constant, going to last, right? Have that concept about things. And that affects the perception of things, how we see them, how we feel them, how we know them in that moment. Yeah? So that underlying concept is what we're changing in the ways of looking. Right, we don't notice that the Vedana is something added on. We think this thing really is pleasant, and then we react to it that way. Yeah. So we kind of, an underlying way of thinking, the conception. Conception is also like conceiving, getting pregnant with something. Yeah. And then we're pregnant with that way of looking. We hold that. The thing comes, is birthed, and seen, and held that way. And then we react to it in a certain way. So the conception, perception, activity unfolds this way. Yeah? We introduce a different conception. It's birthed as a Nietzsche, inconstant, dynamic. We've seen that way, and we relate to it differently, right? And that's the kind of process of experience this way. And we're saying, wow, we might say, wow. We should say, wow. If we're not saying wow, why? Why are you not saying wow? Why is this not, wow, you can do this stuff at a really subtle level by training the heart mind to stay with things. Play, dropping in different conceptions leads to different perceptions, how we feel, see, sense, and then how we relate because of that. Because what else are we relating to but the conception, perception, appearances in consciousness? Okay, are we still holding on? Some of us maybe feel we've fallen off the boat, we're just hanging on the last bit, but I'm coming along as far as I can. Anytime, drop off, get into the ocean, relax. You don't have to get all of this. From my side, I think it's coherent, and later on, if we can listen back, we might be able to go further, but you don't have to do this. But let's keep it going. The conceptions, perceptions that the Buddha is suggesting, see it as anicca, are because they support freedom. They support the liberation of the psychological state we might call dukkha. Yeah, that feeling, that way of seeing, that way of relating, that are dukkha. Okay? Not because it's true. The truth of it isn't as significant as we often think, but because it's useful, because it liberates. Right? One of my friends, a really nice teacher, Gregory Kramer, has a phrase that says, all the teachings are practices. All the teachings of the Buddha were actually an invitation to practice. Right? And oftentimes we listen to them as if they are truth claims about the universe. All conditioned things are anicca. We say, yes, Buddha, yes, I agree, I sign up. And what he's saying, or what they were meaning, is practice this. Practice seeing this way. And then see if that helps you get free. Yeah, the teachings are practices to be applied in our life. Right? So this invitation is to say, all conditioned appearances are dukkha. Unsatisfactory. They do not contain satisfaction. They do not contain dissatisfaction from their own side. Yeah. We hold it that way, and we can see what unfolds. All dukkha is conditioned. It can be reconditioned, decommissioned. All dukkha is conditioned. And then the other side, all conditioning is dukkha. The more conditioned something is, the more dukkha it is. The less conditioned something is, the less dukkha it is. And if there was no conditioning, there would be no dukkha. And this ties in with a broader sense of what these teachings are about. The Buddha was teaching nibbana, nirvana, as you say it, yeah? The fading of all conditioning, the fading of all making, the fading of all appearance, and that's also the fading of all dukkha. And that experience was understood by the Buddha to be very, very nourishing, very, very delightful. So that's kind of the direction, the place of this teaching. But aside from that, is it useful, right? If we see this way, see that we might push and pull in subtler ways than we at first imagined. And this teaching is encouraging us to let go of pushing and pulling and contraction and demanding and all of that in subtler and subtler ways. Is that feeling okay? It's landing all right so far? All right. So hopefully we practiced a bit with the anicca way and we saw, seeing this way, I perceive in this way and it supports me releasing in this way. You know, I get a pain in the knee, I see that it's in constant, it becomes more dynamic, it's more allowed, it's supported, it's released in its time. And we see also that releasing of the needing to get rid of, the or you know, about something that's pleasant, that opening of that releasing of needing to grab onto that actually supports us into a space of more well-being than we might have gotten by getting rid of it or getting it. Yeah. That actually the well-being came in the way that we related to it, in the way that we didn't demand so much of it. So the invitation here today is to say, is there a way that we can hold experience with even less demand, right? Even less push and pull, even less expectation from them, because they are empty of satisfaction and dissatisfaction. And yet we say, quickly project that on. Not going to try and not do that. So apparently there isn't a word that means unsatisfactory in Hebrew, but we can kind of compound it together into a little phrase that means does not contain satisfaction. Yeah. So can you remind me what it was? Oh yeah, sure. But just does not contain, yeah. Lo mechir sibuk, something like this. Could you hear that? Didn't make sense. Lo mechir sibuk, mechil. Lo mechil sibuk. Yeah. So that might help, because the other ways of saying it actually sound more like dissatisfaction. Yeah. And it's this middle way. That's why we're trying to be precise here. It's actually a middle way. I think it might be a fluke of English that it turned up this way. You know, that it has unsatisfactory. Right? Satisfactory. It contains enoughness. It will bring enoughness. If I get enough of this, I will be enough. And that whole kind of projection goes on. This contains dissatisfaction. It pulls away from satisfaction. It drains out my satisfaction. It unplugs my, you know, bathtub that I was filling with satisfaction. Now it's all just draining out of me because of this experience. Yeah. And here I am feeling empty and depleted in a bad way. Yeah. And here we're actually saying this thing does not contain that. It is un. It neither has nor does not have satisfaction. And yet I might normally project that onto it. So yeah, was there a question before? Sure, yeah. So unsatisfactory or unsatisfying. Can you use those kind of synonymously? So kind of side point about it is actually the words really matter for us. And kind of, so it's best to kind of explore for yourself if there are those kind of subtle differences. At this point, I feel okay about both, right? Because they seem to be doing the same thing of like suggesting a different way of holding, of relating, of seeing that thing. So unsatisfactory, unsatisfying, at this point for me is working the same way. Yeah. So it's worth just checking in and just as a kind of a balancing point. The Buddha did not say, you will never be happy in this world. Right? He didn't say that. And in fact, one of my favorite quotes of the Buddha, which I think could be, you know, it's t-shirt or tattoo worthy, is what when I do it will lead to my long-term well-being and happiness. What when I do it, so it's doing it, your activity, there's something, perceiving is an activity, already conceiving, perceiving is an activity, even before we act upon it, yeah? So it can go that deep, but like what when I do it will lead to my long-term well-being and happiness. And then in brackets, and why the hell am I not doing it? But like, what is it? What is it that's actually going to lead to that, support that? And kind of just want to mention a little sidebar thing. It's like when we talk about happiness, there's quite a range for the human being. And sometimes we think more about the higher end, higher energetic range of those happinesses. You know, that kind of excitement when you get what you've always wanted, that excitation that they were measuring in that shopping experiment. Yeah. So that's a high frequency kind of happiness. And underneath that, there's kind of a, you know, that kind of happiness you have when you're in a place that you love and amongst people that you enjoy and you're doing something together and it's kind of like, ah, oh, this is nice. And there's kind of like a longer wave, longer lasting kind of happiness going on there. Yeah. And then occasionally we kind of bump into this experience. It might happen for you on retreats, it might happen for you in nature, something like that. And it's just like, I don't want anything. And I'm good. Whoa, that's not usual. Surely I should get something. You know, well, maybe I should figure out how to make this last. It's like, no, just right now. Really content, satisfied in this existence. And if we were to check in there, we're probably not contracted, we're probably not pushing and pulling, we're probably not creating dukkha for ourselves. It's like, it's a state of okayness here. And then the experience can go even deeper than that to something that we might call stillness or peacefulness, where things have really dropped down a level. And this is something that becomes available in meditation. It's not often available, or it might even freak people out if it becomes available in everyday life. It's like, whoa, most of the world has disappeared. Really very, very peaceful, very, very still. Yeah. These are all happinesses. And when the Buddha says long-term well-being and happiness, I think he's saying go into the deeper kinds of happinesses that are on offer for you if you're willing to be a little bit weird, a little bit unreasonable, a little bit rude towards your experience and say, you're all dukkha. It's all dukkha. And maybe that statement is also meaning from the perspective of profound, profound peace. Even the this and the that's that are pretty, pretty a kind of a disturbance. Maybe that's what they're saying. But for us, just seeing, if I bring this way of looking, does it support me to deepen, to soften, to open, and to allow through the happiness that I take into shops, I take into relationships, I take into these places. Yeah. So as we go down that list, the level of demand on life decreases. So I want to give some time for the practice, so just a few final points. If you're going to do this, you don't have to. If you're going to do this, combine it with lots of samadhi. Yeah, lots and lots of samadhi, lots and lots of well-being. Those practices like we were doing in the first day support a sense of gatheredness, support a sense of well-being, we can open that spaciousness. Whether we've noticed there's some contraction or not, we can just open out, allow ourselves to be here. Breathe in ways which are nourishing, supportive, soothing. Practice the metta, if you like that. You know, all of that, lots of the time. And then occasionally, when we feel steady and stable, we might just bring in, this is not satisfactory. This is unsatisfactory. Because I might have subtly grabbed onto that, tried to fix it, tried to make it a something, tried to own it, tried to keep it. And we wouldn't have noticed. That's why this practice can be helpful, because it unties knots that we didn't recognize that we had tied. Yeah. You can go quite far with the contraction element. Yeah. You can go really very far with the just friendliness to everything kind of element. And then once they reach their range, if you want, you can bring in this practice. It doesn't have the same limitations. If there's an appearance, there might be a suggestion that on this appearance there is satisfaction or dissatisfaction, depending on that. can I just say? No, there isn't. This is dukkha. This is unsatisfactory. So I was thinking about maybe making this a little bit more palatable, which means like easier to digest, easier to eat for us some of the time. So we could be saying nothing is satisfactory or dissatisfactory from its own side. Yeah? And it depends on the way of relating to it. Right? That's a way that we could hold this. Depends on that way of conceiving it. And so I'm going to conceive of it this way. Another way we could hold this is that no changing thing, you know, all things are anicca when we look at them that way, no changing thing can bring lasting satisfaction. How could it? Like, it can't contain that, right? As it's coming and going, changing its form. And kind of deep down, I'm acknowledging that lasting satisfaction is actually the real game, really what I want to be getting into. Or another way of holding this could be that there is a lasting satisfaction. There is a lasting satisfaction. There is a depth, a beauty, a stillness, a peacefulness available to me. But I don't get there by maintaining myself on this level. I've got to let go of that. I've got to open the palm, soften the being. Maybe through a practice like this, which sounds rude, it sounds, you know, rejecting, oh, everything is dukkha, maybe it will actually support us in releasing a well-being that will allow more love to come through us. Maybe that's a possibility for us. Because really we want to be clear, this isn't a rejection. Things. It is done with a lot of love, a lot of tenderness. And so, if you choose that it's the right time for you to do this, we'll do this practice. Otherwise, we'll practice together in our own supportive ways. So, feel for yourself what's going to be a supportive posture to bring yourself into that's going to help you feel your gentleness of your presence. Kindness of your attention. Spend a few moments just calming, soothing, perhaps. Brightening, enlivening through the breathing, through the listening, through the metta. Whatever's your favorite practice for this. this third awareness has gotten small or narrow. Or if the body tension is getting tight. Either way, the energy, the physical posture, the awareness is getting contracted. Just inviting to relax, to release, to expand. Like we're opening a gripped fist. Opening the palm. Opening that contraction. So opening with kindness. Breathing kindness, listening with kindness. Each time we open, each time we allow kindness through, increase the amount of happiness and well-being in ourselves and so in the world. It's a skillful use of your attention. Equally, each time we grab onto, fixate about, we're turning down that opportunity for more well-being. So again, we notice, we open the palm of attention, bring in the kindness. Allowing, letting it in, letting it be, letting it go. Whatever's in attention now, it might be a subtle projection onto it that it can support satisfaction or creates dissatisfaction. We can soften that view. It does not contain from its own side. It's just a vibration, just an impression in awareness. We can let it in, let it be, let it go. If you wish, only if you wish, just whatever's in attention now, just to see this is unsatisfactory. Does not contain. Cannot contain satisfaction or dissatisfaction. The delicate attention, just noticing how that affects the heart, the mind, how that affects the phenomena we're perceiving. When we know it does not contain satisfaction, sometimes there's just the release of joy. Sometimes a release of peacefulness. Sometimes a fading away of the appearance. If it feels enjoyable, you can enjoy it, linger in it. delicate attention. And if it's not enjoyable, if it's not that way, use a practice that is supportive to soften, to open, to bring kindness. Is it to liberate whatever you receive through the senses of needing to satisfy or being a problem? You're released of being seen that way. You are unsatisfactory, neither nor. Time it's helpful, we can remember that we can release contraction, invite that to soften, to open. We can allow our love, our kindness to come through our attention with less expectation on things, less demand, just practicing kindness. Without reducing that contraction or that kindness, we can acknowledge these things I sense do not contain satisfaction, cannot be a problem from their own side. This unsatisfactory, released. And this, the after effects, unsatisfactory, released. to bring in the little note, unsatisfactory. How to say that with the kindness that you mean it with. Finding how long to linger in the after effects, so that the attention can be with the more subtle experience. Also note that this too is unsatisfactory. Not to be grabbed onto, released into, deepened beyond. This too, unsatisfactory. And this, even this, if you're enjoying this practice, feel free to continue, bring it into the walking and all of that, and you're very welcome to stay here with it, whatever happens. If you didn't enjoy that for one millisecond, that's completely fine, because you don't have to do it. And if you do choose to do it, remembering to really support the other practices that support well-being, refining of our attention, the subtilizing of our experience, making it more beautiful and delightful for us to exist in body, heart, mind, and world. So, a couple of words about the walking, but also a general point about practice. Don't forget to do it. And when we do it, really focus on the quality of our attention, much less on the quantity. Often try and measure ourselves, measure our practice according to the easiest thing to measure, which may also be the most useless thing to measure. Yeah, sometimes. How many present moments am I with? You know, how many present footsteps have I done? You know, as if it's kind of an on-off thing. It's much, much more about the quality of that attention that we want to be watching out for. Is there lots of kindness in my attention? Is there lots of sensitivity in my attention? Am I enjoying bringing attention to this? Because that's what I want to get good at. Not to get good at collecting up mindful moments into my rucksack that's full of presence, yeah? But really the quality of my presence, not the quantity, yeah? Not the collection of present moments, but really did I bring through the kind of way I want to be, the how I want to be, not the how much. Does that make sense? Really prioritizing. And it's so freeing, right? Because it doesn't matter if you missed 999 present moments. This one is the only one that you can shape the quality of. This is the one that matters. Let's do it with this one. And then the next one, the next one. While we're here, while we're alive. Yeah. So feel free to bring that through the walking. And we're walking with a sense of friendliness, with a sense of peacefulness. Step by step. Buddha would say, drop by drop, the water pot is filled with your long-term well-being and happiness. Just drop by drop. That's what we're contributing. So, enjoy, if you like to. And we'll give some time for people to find out where they want to be.